what I did was, after we did the scanning electron microscope studies, I decided to send the data to about three or four other experts, SEM directors, scanning electron microscope directors, and geologists at four or five major universities in the U.S. and Canada. Because, you know, as a scientist, you want to get many different opinions, and that's just one. So why my tests were most high-powered, even more than the British Museum, was they were not able to scan the skull directly. They couldn't use the energy dispersive spectroscopy because you have to have a real specimen. And they only had their staff, as far as I know, look at it, where I had several other university experts give weigh in on it. Well, excuse me. I would have to say that none of the experts who have looked at it have identified any modern tooling or abrasives or rotary wheels, any kind of lasers or ion probes. There's no indication that it was, a modern reproduction. That's not to say it's ancient. Somebody could have used ancient techniques to make an ancient skull. So, but the point being is the two skulls that the British Museum tested in 1996, the Smithsonian skull and the British Museum skull, were both ruled out as forgeries because they found 19th century, modern equipment. So mine passed that test. Again, not every expert said the same thing, but no one was able to identify any modern equipment. The other interesting thing was several of the SEM directors said that the surface of the skull looks like it underwent some kind of very slow etching process, like a slow acid etching. And I said, well, what could have caused that? And it seems like either being in water, running water for a long period of time, or being buried in the soil. The soil has, humaric acid, and over maybe hundreds of years, it would actually acid etch the surface, which is interesting. In the eye socket, we just saw some primitive tooling and no acid etching. And it's possible that they could have been like gems or jewels or paint covering the eye, which would have protected it from this acid etching. So I thought that was very interesting that at this point, it could be an ancient crystal skull. There's no reason to rule that out. The red on it, remember I mentioned the red spotting,
mm-hmm.
which we thought was iron oxide. There was no iron peak. It looks like it's some kind of hydrocarbon coating. And I found out that there was a person who has passed away, Gary Butler, who years ago had a similar Himalayan skull with a similar type of coating and brought his to the University of Utah, and they discovered it was a tree resin, an organic tree resin, that coated the skull. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting.
There was some legend that the ancients would coat spiritual objects with a tree resin to keep the energy or psychic energy in when they buried it. I spoke to a director of one of the largest carbon-14 dating labs in the country about carbon dating the resin. That could tell us maybe when the resin was put on the skull and give an idea of the date of when the skull was made. So the problem is the resin could have undergone some contamination. But so I'm trying to apply the most high-powered science to determine, the information about the skull. But I guess at this point, there's nothing to prove that it's a forgery or a modern skull. We can't prove it's ancient because the closest thing would be if the carbon-14 dating of the resin showed it to be, thousands of years old. That's a pretty good piece of circumstantial evidence.
So how big is it?
This is about the size of a baseball. It's a small one.
It is small. Okay.
Yeah, which is fortunate because it could fit into the scanning electron microscope vacuum chambers. There's eight of them. They're called, they were called the Star Himalayan skulls because of the similarity between them and supposedly came out of the Himalayan regions. We don't have really any provenance of these skulls. I don't think there's a provenance of any skull, actually.
Did you notice the cheekbones, though, how thick they are?
Yeah. Isn't that fascinating? It almost looks like it's trying to represent how a person may have looked because it doesn't look exactly like a skull.
It does not look human.
No, and there's like a little smile on it. In fact, I've been working. Actually, one of the reasons I've been working with Becky was because of her psychic ability. Becky is one of the best psychometrists I've ever worked with in 40 years of psychic research. She is amazing. She is like an 80 or 90% accuracy and she'll tell me about an artifact. Then I'll do the research and come up with exactly what she says. She is amazing. In fact, she did psychometry on my crystal skull and believed it had a kind of an alien energy, believe it or not.
Really?
Very intense. It was like a transmitter. I also work with another really good psychometrist, Helene Olson, and she's, again, one of the best. And she also, her and Becky usually are about 90% the same when they study an object. So the hit levels are really high, and they're very consistent. Both of them said they felt it was a strong transmitter, like a communications device. Both of them said it had alien energy. Helene said it's nothing like she's ever experienced. Now, I don't feel this because I'm not psychic, so, you know. Very, very interesting. So that's how I've been working with Becky Moore through psychometry and psychic research for several years, and we've become very, very good friends, and her mom, Betty. And by the way, I think the world of them, if there's any questions about their integrity, these people are 100% integrity, have highest integrity. They're very spiritual people. They are strong believers in God and everything that the values that we have. I can't believe any of this would have been faked or of the imagination. So I I'm no expert, but one of the most respected people that I've ever known, and they're very nice people. So I've been fortunate to be able to work with them. And Becky told me stories of implants that she had, which would be in the book for the first time, which is very interesting because it had to do with she believed the implants were of like a crystal structure, like a living crystal.
Yeah, let's get into the case of Becky and Betty Andreasen, and I just read a little synopsis of what started to happen to them.
Yeah, Becky was 11 years old at the time.
Yeah, she was put in suspended animation for a bit, right? And then they took her out of it because they didn't want Betty, her mother, to panic or something.
Exactly, and Becky remembers that. It's amazing. And then Becky was abducted at different times too, and actually her mom saw her on the same ship. And it's amazing. There are five books written by Ray Fowler, you know, the well-known ufologist on the case. And it happened over a period of many, many, many years.